Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served the Valley for decades, finding their customers the right insurance, or auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be, and also getting, whenever possible, the absolute best price. There's ever a claim, they go to work as if it happened to them, they're always updating. They are just great people that happen to be great professionals. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, by the way, is going to take place on May 6th at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. We are looking forward to that. I know many of you have asked about whether you can come out and, you know, watch the suit play a few holes. I mean, all you have to do is sign a waiver, because the ball could be going in your direction even if you're standing behind him. I just think it's important to mention that. All right. We'll get to basketball in a few moments. Thon raised $11.6 million plus, almost $11.7 million for the Four Diamonds Fund at the Hershey Medical Center. What a great tribute to the hard work of so many people, and also the response of those to the incredible cause of pediatric cancer. That's $1 million more, by the way, than last year. That is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. Congratulations to all involved for a most worthy and incredible cause. So we start there. Now, did anybody watch the Wilder Fury fight Saturday night, Sunday morning? I guess it started at 12:30 in the morning. I think I eventually got around to it. Matt, usually you have a lot of disposable income. Did you pay the $79?
No. And I never would.
What kind of sports fan are you?
Let's just say I had other interests that night I was watching.
What, they have like a Pro Bowl marathon?
No, I was actually watching the Sixers get crushed yet again on the road, and then I was watching other college hoops.
I see.
Yeah. I watched a lot of hoops this weekend.
Okay. I can't believe you didn't watch Fury. You know what I found interesting? Because I had no interest in watching the fight, so I had none. And I used to, believe me, I used to watch boxing all the time. I mean, my brother Kevin and I would watch, we'd watch all the Ali fights, we'd watch Foreman, we'd watch Frazier, we'd watch Sugar Ray Leonard, Hearns, Hagler. I mean, we watched them all. And enjoyed it. Boy, I just lost complete interest in the fight game. You know, just lost complete interest in it. And so I had no desire to watch it. Yet I'm riding down to breakfast in the elevator yesterday morning, and guess who was talking about it? All the players were. Players were all talking about it. So maybe this is appealing to the younger generation.
I am not one of them. I can confirm that.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, I found that to be fascinating, that the players felt that way. You know, Brockington was talking to Lundy about it, and you know, it was interesting that it caught my interest that they knew all about it. phenomenal. All right, yesterday, let's see, a couple things. Penn State last week did something it had not done for a month. And what they did last week that they had not done for a month is that they did not play often with the lead last week. And as you know, I've talked about that many, many times on this show. I've talked about it on pregame shows, whether it's football or basketball. I've talked about the importance of getting to the lead and playing with the lead. There's a psychology to it that I think is really important. And they didn't play with the lead often last week. They didn't get off to good starts. And they're going to have to get back to that. The next part is they didn't shoot the three well last week. Now, that's part of getting off to good start. But they didn't shoot the three last week very well. They only hit four yesterday. I'm not saying you go out and you fire up 43 pointers. No, that's not what I'm saying. There is a way to do this, you know, where there's some balance between your two game and your three game. But Penn State normally has to hit between 7 and 10 threes. Yesterday they hit 4. So they didn't get to the mark that I think is important for them. The other one that they, now what's interesting is they out-rebounded Indiana yesterday. It's interesting in this regard. It is the first time all season that Penn State has out-rebounded a team and lost. Penn State's now 15-1 this season when out-rebounding the opponents. The first time it's happened. Part of the reason is that Penn State, for one of the few times this season, lost the combo stat of blocks and steals. Penn State blocks and steals numbers usually are heavily weighted on Penn State's side, and they didn't win that yesterday. So you've got to be able to do that, the block and steal number. They're going to get into one of those tough rock fights on Wednesday night with Rutgers. What's interesting about Rutgers, though, is they're a very physical team. By the way, Ron Harper's playing really well. Let's give Ron Harper a lot of credit. He's playing really good basketball. Geo Baker can be up and down, but he's playing better right now. He went over 1,000 career points yesterday. And, you know, those are going to be two primary guys in the offense, no question. But Rutgers is also a team that's physical. And what's interesting is that they average 5 more fouls per game on the road than they do at home. Now, let's be fair. Sometimes when you are behind, you will commit fouls to put a team in line. So you may be able, you may build a few more up. But for the most part, though, they're 5 more fouls per game on the road than they are at home. Something to watch for in what could be a physical game on Wednesday night. People have talked about the ranking. Penn State is ranked 16th, I believe, in the latest poll. That's fine. I think that's great for marketing. I understand that, you know, look, it puts the name of Penn State out there every single week. I mean, they're going to be on the bottom of the screen the entire time. They're going to be talked about as a ranked team and so forth. That's why when we talk about the football-basketball combo, if you're playing well in both football and in basketball, guess what it does? It puts the name of your school out there all the time. Those are the only two college sports that do that for you, that put your name. If you're playing well in both, college football and college basketball are the only two that get you constantly in the news, constantly recognized. And so being ranked 16th still continues to do that for Penn State. It's fine. I don't concern myself much with the personally with the ranking, and it goes back to what I've talked about with college football. To me, what's important is where you are you in the when the first college football playoff ranking comes out. I think it's fine if you're ranked 5th or 6th. I barely mention the ranking on any broadcast in college football, barely, until they get to the college football playoff. Now when you get to the college football playoff ranking, now that determines where you are to get to the Final Four, where are you to get to a New Year's Six Bowl game, things like that. That now becomes the ranking that you do have to talk about and the positioning you have in it. College basketball, it's the same thing. As I've said many, many, many times on the show, when Penn State was not ranked for many years, because Penn State wasn't ranked until this season, really, for the first time since the regular season in 96. So it's been, obviously, 24 years. Nobody knows that more than me, because, yes, I was here 24 years ago doing the games. Okay. All right. But I haven't mentioned it. I've mentioned before, I said, look, college basketball is a tournament. So does it matter where you're ranked by the writers and the coaches? In reality, no. So I haven't really talked about it that much. I'm more looking at the Nets, the KenPoms, the analytics part of it, because I do know that they sit there in the room and they do look at that. It doesn't mean it's the be-all, end-all, but they do look at it. They don't sit in the room and say, hey, look, Georgia's ranked number 8. They don't really care what the polls are, just like they don't really care what the polls are in football. They come up with their own ranking system. And let's face it, every person does it differently. Some do it more by feel. Some do use the eye test. Some rely heavily on analytics. They all have the same information in the room. But you can draw different conclusions from what you see. That's fine, because we all have opinions. So I think the ranking is great for marketing. It's awesome for marketing. But it's not the be-all, end-all about where you're placed in the tournament. So now let's get to the two chief bracketologists. We had Joe Lenardi on the show Friday, and the other one is Jerry Palm. These are the two that normally get the field pretty close. Doesn't mean they're going to be spot on and right on every one of them, but they usually get the field pretty close. Matt, guess where Penn State is in both of their brackets on this particular day after losing twice last week?
I'm going to say a 4 seed.
They're 4.
Okay.
Yep. They're 4 seed.
Because that's where Lenardi had them on Friday, too, and I figured even if they were higher on everybody else's ranking, this loss probably put them at number 4 out of 4 seed.
That's where they are.
Yeah.
And same thing with Jerry Palm. In other words, I'm looking for the consistency here between the two of them. And that's where they are. Now just go back to work and win. Go back to work and win. You're playing at home on Wednesday night. You're going to have a tough, hard-fought physical game against a team that's going to try and drag the pace of the game down. Yet the odd thing is that Rutgers played yesterday at Wisconsin. Rutgers shot 50% from the field yesterday. I thought, wow, I was kind of taken aback by that. That they were, you know, that they shot 50%, because that's not their MO. Now, Harper's shooting great, so let's start. I mean, I don't want to include Ron Harper Jr. in that, because, you know, I think that but they shot 50. But the irony is Wisconsin shot 48% yesterday. And then the foul thing, I mentioned the foul thing. You know, Wisconsin's a team that, for whatever reason, doesn't foul a lot. Frankly, I've done a lot of Wisconsin games in my lifetime. They don't commit a lot of fouls. No offense, I don't see that. I mean, and I'm talking about, like, I've done neutral games with Wisconsin. I don't see it. And they only committed 12 fouls yesterday. Rutgers committed 21. So, that's what's going to happen here on Wednesday night. You have to shoot the ball better, no question. I think you have to get out to the lead and play with the lead. Because I think that's been part of Penn State's MO. Get to the lead, play with the lead. And it brings a different dynamic and psychology to the game when you're doing that instead of fighting from behind. And I think that's going to be one of the important things if they can do that at home on Wednesday night. I know everybody's asking about Myron Jones. None of us know about the Myron Jones situation. It is not the call of Patrick Chambers. It's not the call of the trainer, Jonathan Salazar. It's a combination between Drs. Gregory Billy and Dr. Wayne Sebastianelli. You know, they're the ones who, in the end, will make the call because they're the medical experts. They're the medical professionals. So it's going to be up to them as to when they think it's right for him to play. When that is, don't know. Now, he did warm up yesterday. He was in the layup line. But we'll see. Today is going to be a film day and a shoot day. It is not going to be anything more than that. When they're playing and practicing at a different time of the year now.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served the Valley for decades, finding the right insurance, auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be, at the best price, if wherever possible. They'll update policies. I mean, look, they're just great professionals that just really get and understand the insurance business. You want to go with the best? That's why I've got Matt. I want to go with the best.
I'm flattered.
Well, go to Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We are in the Sunbury Motors studios, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Let's get the Philadelphia point of view, and that would be Matt Leon joining us now from Philadelphia. Matt, I get the sense from you that you saw your fair share of Ivy League basketball over the weekend, kind of mediocre in some ways.
Now, it's been a rough last couple of weekends for the Quakers. Well, it's kind of the last couple of weekends have kind of epitomized what the Ivy League, that anybody can beat anyone on any given day. Last week they lose to Brown, then they almost lead wire to wire in beating league leader Yale, and then this past weekend they struggle on a Friday night in Hanover, New Hampshire, in front of about 600 people, lose to Dartmouth, and then play really well on Saturday, or play much better Saturday, but run into a more talented Harvard team and lose that game. So it was a rough weekend for the Quake Show in New England.
Wow. What's the read on Villanova? I mean, Villanova's had a good year. I mean, you know, and they put themselves in a good spot. But what do you think about Villanova right now?
I think Jay's got them trending in the right direction, as he usually does this time of year. I don't think it's, you know, we were to line up the last 8-9 years of Villanova basketball, I don't think it's one of the more talented teams, but they do what they do, and they do it very well. Everybody knows their role. Players get better from game 1 to game 35, and they will be a very difficult out in the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament.
Look, and it's unpredictable. Jay's had some great teams during the course of the regular season that have gone on to win the championship twice. He's also had some great teams in the regular season that didn't get through the first weekend. So, I mean, it really is, it's really tough. I mean, I don't think people have a gauge on that sometimes.
Yeah, and I think so much of it, and you watch enough basketball, I'll tell you this, so much of it's matchups.
It's all matchups.
A team that, you know, that you look on paper and you're 27-4 and they're 19-11, you won your conference, they finished sixth. But guess what? They've got two athletic wings that you struggle to keep from, you know, turning the corner and getting baseline on you, and you can't stop them from getting deep, and all of a sudden, you know, you're chasing the game. It's so much of its matchup. It's one of the, and it's one of the reasons why I think the NCAA tournament is the best thing going, because there are, it is such a marathon through those six, maybe even seven games of the tournament with different matchups on short turnaround and stuff like that, it's really something. But that's, you know, it's an easy thing to say Coach X can't win the big game because they haven't been able to get out of the first weekend. It's so much more than that. And it's one of the reasons why I actually don't like the conference tournament as opposed to the regular season. I think as far as if you're talking about an automatic berth into the tournament, I think the team that is the best over the long slog of a conference season should go rather than a team that maybe got hot over a weekend. But last time I checked, nobody really asked my opinion on that. So.
Look, the money's the big part of it.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, remember the old days of the ACC? They were the first ones to really do a conference tournament, and only the winner of the tournament got the bid.
Yeah.
I mean, Maryland for years had really terrific teams, couldn't win the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, so then they start going to the at-large thing and more, you know, and they open the door for other people. It's unreal. So any reaction out of Phillies camp? Everybody's been going camp to camp to camp. I know I asked you this last week. So any update on how the Phillies have reacted to the Astros thing?
Not really. There was a little bit of talk when the guys first got in, but I think since then it's kind of settled in and you kind of get into the Grapefruit League. And I think one of the things about that Astros thing is it happened, the news kind of broke at a perfect time where camps were just starting and storylines hadn't really developed yet, and there were not games, so it was just workouts, so there really wasn't a lot to talk about. Now you're kind of into the Aaron Nola pitched his first game yesterday. Bryce Harper expected to make his debut tomorrow. There's enough in-house storylines that I think, barring some new developments, which I'm pretty sure we'll eventually see. I can't believe this is going to peter out, not anything new, really.
How do you view the Sixers right now?
The biggest enigma in professional sports, probably.
Yeah.
I still think they'll be fine when they get to the playoffs. I think they're built more to be a playoff, a team that's more successful in the playoffs. But they do have these performances that are alarming. That being said, though, I think people take it to the nth degree when, if you kind of listen to the talk and the talking heads and read stuff, and you read it and listen to it with no context, you would think the Sixers had lost by 35, and then you open the box score and like, oh, they won by 16.
Yeah, I know.
So it's a little bit of, I mean, it's weird, and they do weird things, and there are weird situations, but they're still 13 games above 500. They're going to get into the playoffs, and regardless of how things look now, they are a team that other teams are not going to want to face in the postseason.
What about the Simmons situation? Because obviously he's been hobbled a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Big, you know, he's out tonight with lower back tightness. Back, it's never good. Further evaluation at this point. I don't think there's a need to be alarmed past anything of just the bumps and bruises of the season, but it is something to keep an eye on, and if it turns into a thing, then you've got to reevaluate some things.
Have you ever thought, finally, of being a Zamboni driver that can also fill in as a spare goalie?
You know, that is a great story,
isn't
and
it?
I'll ask you this. We were talking about this in the newsroom today. Can you think of any other type of situation that would be akin to that? I could only come up with one thing that I thought was possible that would be similar.
What was that?
That was an NFL team, their kicker gets hurt the Saturday before a game.
Right.
And they have to sign a set. Because I think place kicking is something that somebody who has experience but hasn't been a professional could go in a one-off or a short term and have relative success. You know what I'm saying? That is the only thing. And actually, the more I thought about it, there's probably NFL roster regulations that you can't make a move after this time on a Saturday or something,
sure.
So it's not realistic. But just from the pure, you know, athleticism and athletic situation, that was the only thing I could think of that could ever occur that would be akin to what happens with the emergency goalie, which is one of the greatest reoccurring every 9-10 month storylines I think we get.
He gave up two goals and he made 8 saves.
Yeah.
He saved the game for them, and he's the Toronto Zamboni guy.
Yeah. And he got the win because they were tied when it was tied when he went in.
He is 1-0 in his lifetime.
Yeah, that is awesome. It really is cool.
Well, you're about 200-0 on this show. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Bye bye.
Well, that Discover commercial started out, so you want to hear something amazing. I thought we were going to hear the Shikellamy pregame show. Imagine my disappointment. No? You don't think so?
I guess not.
Okay, we're at the Combine. Okay. And, of course, you know what the big news out of the Combine is today.
Yes, Joe Burrow's hands
are small for a quarterback. Oh, no. He has 9-inch hands. Now, let's at least do the logic of small hands for a quarterback. Logic of small hands for a quarterback has nothing to do with throwing the football. But if you can't have a meat cleaver grip on it, could you have your arm hit and fumble the ball? Okay. They do get concerned about that, so they do look at that. They're talking about the success of quarterbacks with smaller hands in the NFL. Goff, Tannehill. Mahomes evidently has the proper quarterback ability to throw the ball hand size to go with massive talent. Massive talent means something. Okay, Daniel Jeremiah. His mock draft looks like this. He's with the NFL Network. You know, he's the guy that essentially took over for Mike Mayock. Got Joe Burrow going 1, Chase Young 2 to the Redskins. Jeffrey Okuda of Ohio State to Detroit. Mekhi Becton from Louisville to the Giants, an offensive tackle. Tua going to Miami. Chargers with Jedrick Wills from Alabama. Carolina, Derek Brown, the DT from Auburn. Arizona with Tristan Wirfs, the big offensive lineman from Iowa. They think Wirfs can play guard in the NFL. He's a tackle with Iowa. Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker from Clemson to Jacksonville. And then 10, Andrew Thomas, the big tackle from Georgia. Now, his top 10 talent-wise, at least going into the weekend, would be Chase Young, 1 of Ohio State. This is Daniel Jeremiah now. Derek Brown of Auburn, 2, the defensive tackle. Joe Burrow, the quarterback from LSU, 3. Isaiah Simmons from Clemson, the linebacker at 4. Jeffrey Okuda, the corner from Ohio State at 5. Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback of Alabama at 6. Javon Kinlaw, the big defensive tackle from South Carolina at 7. CeeDee Lamb, the speedy, graceful wide receiver from Oklahoma at 8. Jerry Jeudy, the wideout from Alabama at 9. And Mekhi Becton, the tackle from Louisville. Now, Tua's not going to be able to do anything this weekend, but he did get a very good report on his hip a couple of weeks ago. But they're going to go through the medicals again with him this weekend, including making sure it's not just the hip, but the 2 high ankle sprains he's had. So the combine when does that begin? Thursday?
Thursday at 4.
Thursday at 4. Well, you seem to know.
I'm telling you, I like the combine.
You know it's guys in shorts and t-shirts running, right?
Yes. I'm fully aware. I know tape is the ultimate prize of this, but I don't know. That's still fun.
There are no pads.
Yes. There's some drills that I like better than others, but...
Shuttle drills?
Yes. Green cone drill.
You're hoping they trip, aren't you?
No, I would never do that.
You're one of those guys.
Now, they're doing all measurements today. Like, for example, K.J. Hamler measured at 5'8 and something or other. I could have told you that. What will happen with him is when he runs his 40, they're going to go, whoa, okay. I think that'll make a big difference for him. That'll make a big difference. Who are you looking for? What are you looking for in the combine?
Basically, are guys living up to their tape? Does it kind of compare to their tape? Does the athleticism match what we're seeing so far? What we saw from them on the field and in their college days? What we see from them on tape? How do they do as far as meeting with the media? And what do you hear about as far as when they talk to teams? What teams guys are interested in, or vice versa? You know, those little types of things like that. It's not the end all be all, but it's just more of a confirmation. And plus, for me at least, it gets a chance to look at guys that maybe jump out, and then you go and back and watch their tape later, and then think, hey, maybe this guy can actually play too in this league. So it's a little bit of give and take for me.
By the way, cool dude of the weekend, David Ayers. Who's David Ayers? Zamboni driver for the Toronto Maple Leafs American Hockey League farm team, the Toronto Marlboros. Every rink designates a spare goalie in case the first two get hurt. Well, he's the spare goalie in Toronto. He's the emergency goalie. He drives the Zamboni. Well, both Carolina goalies got hurt. So the 42-year-old, takes the ice near the end of the second period. He gave up two goals. He says, I told the boys in the dressing room, once we come out for the third period, I'll be settled down and ready to win this one. He stopped the next eight shots, and yes, they won 6-3, and he was the winning goaltender. How about that?
Probably the best story of the weekend right there.
I love it. Now, the fact that he parked the Zamboni in front of the goal helped. No. It's a great story. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Sudden Death. Steps in, he's the Penguins goalie in the Stanley Cup final against the Chicago Blackhawks. Really? So, the Miracle on Ice was celebrated over the weekend, and of course, it was the Vegas Golden Knights that host them. They weren't even thought of 40 years ago. And the New York Times had a great headline that said, 40 years later, it's still a miracle. And they are so right. And it's really cool. Did you ever hear the story about how Michaels got the job?
I think I did, because I remember reading it in his book that he just brought out a couple years ago.
Well, I believe this is how it happened. He was on the NBC crew in Sapporo, Japan, 72. So they only brought eight announcers to Sapporo. So they had to rotate who was doing what. So Al got put on hockey and did a game between the Soviet Union and Czechoslovakia for the gold medal in 72. So in 80, they're saying, okay, who has any hockey experience? I said, well, Al did the 72 game between Czechoslovakia and Soviet Union. Go, hey, you're in. See, that's how he got it.
And I do remember him saying, too, in his book, how difficult it was for him to keep a secret of what happened in that game because that game was being played on the tape delay that night.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. What, yeah. But you know what? I was working in college radio at the time, and I had the afternoon sports. So I do like the 4, 4:35, 5:30, and 6 o'clock sportscast. So on that night, which was a Friday night, you know, we have the ticker, the AP wire. So I knew when I left the station, the score was 2-2 at the end of one. I knew that. But we wanted to watch the game. So Kathy and I went downtown with a group of friends, and I didn't want to know the final score. I just knew. So I watched the first period. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know it's 2-2. But then I saw how they tied the game and went, wow. Then after that, it was like watching a live game for me because I didn't know the final score. Nate Bauer, next half hour, Blue White Illustrated. As we continue, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.